a piece of your favorite sports team? Now you can buy or sell your favorite teams on the world's first sports stock market app.
That's right, Rick. Download the free All Sports Market app on Apple and Android and start investing in your favorite teams today. You earn dividends every time your teams win, and you can turn those dividends into profits that can be used for in-app upgrades and other features. Challenge your friends or compete against the rest of the world.
Download the app and use referral code DeLorean when you register, and you could win your very own DeLorean. How cool is that? Check it out on asmfree.com or in the iTunes store. Again, that's asmfree.com. Don't be left out.
Welcome to the Assignment. And now, your hosts, Rick Flieger and Rick Briggs.
It's a new day, but the technical issues continue. Welcome to the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show.
But they're getting less and less.
Yeah, it's closer. That was pretty close.
Yeah,
the music was there. It was just quiet.
Yeah, that's all.
So, hey, check us out. AsylumFantasySports.com. The Asylum Sports Network can be found at AsylumFantasySports.com or AsylumSports.com. What's our website, Rick?
AsylumFantasySports.com.
That's what I thought. You had me questioning myself. But, check that out. All kinds of fantasy goodness to be found there. Don't know how much of it you'll find here, Rick. We are in a dead period. I'm looking at the NFL.com on my Google machine, and all I see is about a PAT from the 15-yard line. So I guess we're going to talk for an hour about that.
Oh, I kind of doubt that we'll be talking about that for an hour. Hey, we are Flieger and Briggs. If you don't know that, you should by now. And welcome for tuning in. You know, we've got NHL playoffs weekend. I tell you what, that Duck-Blackhawk series, that's going to be a killer.
Yeah,
did you watch game one?
In and out. I didn't sit down and clock the whole thing. I actually made last night's Tampa Bay-New York game appointment television. It ended up being a blowout, which never happens with the Rangers. I never thought I'd see the day where Henrik Lundqvist would give up five in a playoff game.
Right. But, I think the four best teams right now are there, and it should be quite interesting. I tell you what, it still favors the West in my mind. I know a lot of people think that the Rangers were the best team going in, but I tell you, just something about the Hawks. You know, when we had Bernie Nichols on the fantasy show a couple weeks ago, two or three weeks ago, it just looked like when they got rolling, that's what it looked like. They just looked like they just cranked it up into another gear.
They've been there. They've done that. They've won cups recently. They played for cups recently. Look, the Rangers are a scary team. Now the Lightning are exciting to watch. They've got all that top-end talent. They can score goals. When you play defense the way the Rangers do and you got Henrik Lundqvist back there, I'm going to assume last night was an anomaly and you're not going to see much of that from Henrik Lundqvist. They're going to be a tough out for anybody. But right now, if I had to pick a favorite, it's going to be the winner out of Anaheim and Chicago. And look, we spent a lot of time talking about Chicago. Anaheim is just, they're bad. I mean, there's no other way
to
put it. That is a bad, they're forgotten because they're out there in the West. And for whatever reason, us guys on the East Coast, you tend to think of everything happening out West as, I don't know, more high-flying, more skilled. It's not. That's just a nasty, nasty hockey team.
They are, I think, you know, not just out of these four teams, but out of the entire league. I think they are the most physical and the deepest team going. Right now,
they've got top end scoring. They will take your head off your shoulders and everything in between. That's a complete hockey team that just gets forgotten about.
Yeah, and they wear people down, you know, on top of everything else with the depth that they have and the physicality that they have. It's hard to keep up with them. And I don't know if Chicago can, if anybody can, I think Chicago can. But it's going to be tough. They're already down. Anaheim's up 1-0, and they're in Anaheim. If they go to Chicago with a 2-0 lead, it's going to be tough haul.
Yeah, it's going to be. I think Anaheim's the better team, top to bottom. But you have to, especially in the NHL at this time of year, factor in the experience that Chicago has. And I think that's the real uphill climb Anaheim has. So, Rick, let's talk about it a little bit. I guess obviously we're not going to do an hour. Sort of the four main highlights for me. I was reading earlier going on at the NFL owners meetings. Obviously they've, you know, breaking news here. They've agreed to move the extra point back to the 15. Do you care? I mean, here's my thought on the whole extra point. At least they didn't do some of that wacky crap they were talking about a couple of months ago. They're going to leave the two-point conversion where it's at, which is fine by me. I kind of like the – and this is everybody's argument against it. I kind of like the extra point being an automatic, and then it's kind of cool when somebody botches one, and invariably every few years somebody botches a big one. It doesn't happen often. I don't mind it being a gimme. Look, not that – what if you're going to the 15, that's what, a 33-yarder,
right,
basically. That's still pretty much a gimme. It seems anything inside of 50 is a gimme now. I guess it makes it more interesting in bad weather or in high-pressure situations. But I liked it being an automatic just for the drama you would get when somebody did botch one.
And I don't know what the purpose of it is, this big breaking news, this rule change. I really don't know what the purpose of it is. They say, well, they're too easy. Well, so is a one-foot putt,
right,
but you still have to make it.
You still got to make it in a pressure situation.
Right. And, you know, it, to me, the farther you go back, you know, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to get more two-point attempts?
It could be.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Or are they going to use this as some sort of wacky way to get a three-point play or something?
Well, and that's the junk they were talking about earlier. Weren't the Colts, I think, putting that on the table, and if you go back further, it'd be a three-pointer, and after so much, you had to try a two, like the college football overtime.
Yeah.
I don't need all this junk. It's been fine just the way it is.
Yeah.
Why does it need to be harder? Why can't it be automatic? You still got to snap it, and you still got to hold it, and you still got to put it through, and things can go wrong and have. Now, the numbers show the large, vast majority of the time it does. This just seems gimmicky. You're turning it into the XFL.
It is gimmicky because, you know, everything has been geared towards, oh, we want more offense. Well, you know, what's the point of making one point harder,
right,
if you're making the other six easier?
Yeah, I don't get it.
I think it's stupid. I think it's senseless. And after all this nonsense with the domestic abuse cases, the DUIs, and whatever, you know,
murders,
yeah, and the deflate gates and this, that, and the other, they're worried about the stupid extra point.
Yeah, it's a whole lot about that. It tells you how big the NFL has gotten, that this is breaking news, not just on, you know, NFL sites, but on your news sites. This is big news, so kudos to the NFL for that, I guess.
What if they went to four strikes?
Yeah. You know, quit messing with the integrity of your
game.
Right.
It's strange.
Are we going to reach a saturation point with the NFL? Are we ever going to get there?
I don't know. It's a tough thing. I mean, I'm sure if you go back to the mid-60s, they'd have never said, well, baseball, it's king. It'll never fail.
Right.
I mean, it'll never fade. It'll always be number one. No, it's not anymore.
True.
So, I mean, no, any king can be dethroned. So what could be, I have no clue.
Yeah, I think it may be as we, you know, and I'll use this term loosely. I'll use it as the media would use it, as we evolve as a people, and the injuries and the concussion concerns come on and on. I could see it undoing itself that way, because no matter what rule changes they put in place, the game does not lend itself
to
eliminating that
type
of thing.
But only for something else, Rick. I mean, look, you know, and it started really with the death of Duck Koo Kim with Boom Boom Mancini, you know, boxing. You know, they shortened it from 15 rounds
right
to 12, and the talent started fading away a little bit. Yeah, boxing, you go back 40 years ago, a boxing, you know, a title match, I mean, that was newsworthy, period.
Right, right.
You know, they go unnoticed anymore because nobody even paying attention to it. But by the same token, now they have the MMA killing each other in these octagons. So, I mean, I don't think the violence and the injuries matter to people when it gets right down to it.
Does it take it out of the mainstream, though? Because MMA is big, but it's not mainstream. You know, whatever their big pay-per-view a year is, isn't mentioned in the same breath as the Super Bowl.
Well, certainly not. Certainly
or any
not.
Average dummy game, Jacksonville game in the middle of the NFL.
No, I agree. However, it has taken away from boxing.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. Something can replace football to a, you know, to a certain extent.
Right.
Where, you know, football may not be number one anymore. This thing, it wouldn't be either, whatever it is that replaces it. I don't know what sport could ever overtake it.
Don't call in here talking about soccer. I'll call you an a-hole hang up on you. I'm enough with the soccer guys.
I mean,
I'm tired of them all.
You know, soccer is still the most popular game
in the world,
but it's never going to be here.
Who cares about the world?
And we're already going over to London with the NFL. Now, let's face it,
there you go.
It's going.
Right. It's going to happen.
So, I don't know. I don't think probably even in both of our lifetimes the NFL falls from number one.
Probably not. I got to tell you, as a guy who does this and clearly has a passion, or I wouldn't be doing this, it's wearing on me a little bit. I find myself more and more annoyed with the league. Now, what the NFL has a special way of doing is in on Sunday when the whistle blows and the ball goes in the air, it sort of all goes out the window. And I find myself in this weird position where I'm spending 5 days a week bitching about the league and how annoying they are and how stupid it is and how I'm over it and I can't take it anymore. As soon as that first ball gets in the air, I'm all the way back in, and then Monday night when the Monday night game wraps up, I got five more days of just griping of all the things that I hate about the league. So I find myself in a weird position. I wonder if I'm ever going to tilt the other way. Is where this comes from. Yeah, as it's always all about me. These are just sort of my thoughts, and I wonder how many other people, if anybody, is feeling that way.
I find it interesting that the NFL comes up with all these different rules.
Right.
And we've been talking about this the last two or three years, how some of these games are just getting so
It's about
long,
right.
Horrible. But in the same breath as the NFL is doing this to the rules and the games on television, isn't it amazing that they started the red zone where you watch constant action?
Right.
So you're not sitting there watching Ed Hockley throw 48 flags every game.
Which he's wont to do.
And flexing his guns.
If I had those guns, I'd paint the stripes on myself. You couldn't get a shirt on me if I was jacked like Ed Hockley. Don't get me wrong.
No, but I don't know. I'm certainly not saying it's any sort of a plan or anything, but it's kind of interesting how they come up with red zone almost at the same time, all these rule changes and 3-hour, 4-hour games are going on.
Right. And this is where the size and scope of the NFL is working against itself. There is such a microscope and such a spotlight on almost every game, any random Jacksonville, Tennessee game, any given week. This game has gotten so big, be it because of gambling and fantasy football and everything that goes on around it, that the smallest mistake by a referee, and don't get me wrong, they make plenty, that we keep having to expand replay and look at things closer and breaking down things frame by frame. I was watching earlier in the week, in middle of the day, I can't even remember who was playing, but the NFL Network will just show classic games or great games, or I don't even know what they call it. And even games from 10 and 15 years ago, when there was a big play, it was a big play and you lived in the moment and the game moved on. And the play was what it, now everything is challenged. Everything is looked at again. Everything is broken down frame by frame, that any momentum changing, game changing play, it takes 15 minutes to determine. You can't even get excited when your team recovers a fumble, intercepts a ball,
right,
sacks a quarterback, because did you hit him above the shoulder, below the waist? Did all of these things factor into it? There's no real enjoyment of the moment anymore, and that's where I get annoyed during game time, is you don't have that furious action. That's an excellent point with the Red Zone channel, where you sort of get that and it hops back and forth. But how many times is poor Scott Hansen, you know, he shows it there and there's the big play and they immediately jump to the next aim, and then he's got to cut in over top of some other promo saying, hey, those last three great plays you saw, they're all wiped out. Forget about all that. It's first and nine, or you know what I mean?
Or believe it or not, that was a touchdown.
I can't believe there was actually a fumble ruled in the NFL. That's where my real frustration comes in.
I agree.
Now, here's my other frustration as we talk about these owners' meetings. L.A. gaining momentum here at these spring meetings. Why? How many times does it have to fail?
Sharing stadiums with Oakland and San Diego. Leave San Diego in San Diego. Man, the mayor's trying to put together a financial package to keep the Chargers there. I don't want to hear the Los Angeles Chargers. I want to hear the San Diego Chargers.
Right.
And we've already went through the hilarity that was the Los Angeles Raiders. They belong in Oakland.
Yeah.
Leave them there. Los Angeles, you had the Rams. You lost them.
Yeah, now you're trying to bring them back. And we got the L.A. Jaguars if they don't end up in London. How many – I understand it's the number two TV market in the country. Newsflash, NFL, newsflash, everybody. They don't care. They just don't care. Here's why, and it's to L.A.'s credit. There's stuff to do there.
Well, not
the weather's nice. They don't have this clamoring out there that we do on the East Coast. It's just that simple.
Well, not only that, Rick, but you know, you can go and basically look all around the country and pick a city. And I'll just go right off the bat and take one. St. Louis. It's a baseball town.
Right.
They love their Cardinals, man. Los Angeles loves the Dodgers.
Right.
They love the NBA. I mean, that's a basketball in a baseball town. Never was really a football town. Okay? So, and, you know, even the Kings have won a couple of cups. I mean, you know.
Nobody cared.
I mean, they like it.
It's fine. It's neat. You know.
But it's not like the World Series to Los Angeles. Yet, if you win the cup in Boston, that's a whole different ballgame.
Exactly.
They're baseball and hockey up there.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and so, I mean, I think it's just a matter of some of these towns have different sports loves.
Right.
Simple as, I mean, Pittsburgh's a football town.
Absolutely.
There's no question about that. It's Pittsburgh. It's football, hockey, baseball.
Yeah.
Right now. I mean, baseball and hockey, it depends basically on the trends of the two teams.
Right.
But nobody's taking over the Steelers.
No, it will never happen.
No.
It will absolutely never happen. Your point being here, if there was a clamoring in L.A. to get the NFL back, in L.A., fine, so be it. And they can afford it, and it's great for the league if you have a successful team in L.A. They're not clamoring for it. This is Roger Goodell. This is the league desperately trying to get a team in this huge market in L.A. You hear no clamoring from that. So it's just going to fail again. You're going to – I guess if you would make an argument, fine, you want to pluck the Jaguars out of Jacksonville, maybe I can live with that because nobody cares down there either.
Well,
but
the
to just force the team out
going
to L.A.
What makes anybody think that because you take Jackson or the Jaguars out of Jacksonville, what makes you think all of a sudden Los Angeles goes, wow, we have a football team.
Right.
We have the Jaguars. They stink.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it just makes no sense to
me. Well, and look, you talked about their basketball town. They love their Dodgers. It's a college football town.
Mm-hmm.
It's USC. You know, to a lesser extent, UCLA, but to use USC. This team's going to come in and automatically be slotted, what's that, 1-2, we'll put them just ahead of the Kings, so 4th or 5th, in a town that isn't a sports town. Number one, it's a transient town. Nobody's from L.A. Everybody moves out there to get rich. Nobody's from L.A. Nobody who can afford to go to these games anyhow is from L.A. because it's going to become this big cosmopolitan nonsense that a Lakers game is what it's going to be. I'm just tired of this clamoring. This is what the league has become. It's about the next quick buck. It's about Roger Goodell forming the league in his eyes. He wants an international presence in London. If he wants to be relevant, if the league's to be relevant, we have to have a team in L.A. Leave it be. Look, by that argument, are you going to pull the Packers out of Green Bay? How many people live in Green Bay? 11? I mean, honestly. Yeah, I don't know how close it is to what's the big city in Wisconsin, Madison. How close is it even to that?
Milwaukee's in Wisconsin.
Milwaukee. I guess, it'd be Milwaukee's team. But just leave it be. I'm so tired of this thing. And that's sort of my central theme to everything when you talk about the extra point, when you talk about the rule changes, when you talk about L.A. Look, nobody in L.A. cares because there's better stuff to do than watch the Jaguars.
The proof is in the pudding. They have a team, like you said, in Green Bay. They have one in Nashville. They're doing fine.
Right.
They have one down in Charlotte. They're doing fine. Jacksonville's not, but the Dolphins seem to be doing okay.
Well, and to that point, Pittsburgh's Mayberry compared to L.A. or New York. It's Mayberry.
Well, yeah, Milwaukee's the same way. Buffalo's the same way.
Buffalo, yeah.
Yeah, yank them. I mean, we already saw what happened when they were talking about when Ralph Wilson died. Oh, my God, they're going to move the Bills.
Yeah,
I mean, they're ready to burn the place down.
They're ready to burn all of New Jersey down because Jon Bon Jovi was getting involved. You don't mess with the Bills.
No.
You're not going to get that kind of passion in L.A. Now, you don't have it in Jacksonville. I never liked moving teams around, though. Maybe that's just what it is. That always annoyed me. And the whole back and forth, Oakland to L.A. to Oakland to L.A. to Oakland to L.A. Come on, if you want to move the Raiders, I guess. I don't know. How far is Oakland from L.A.? It's pretty far, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But you got San Francisco up there, so if you wanted to move the Raiders down, I don't know. I actually knew them as the L.A. Raiders, sort of when my NFL consciousness began. So I don't have the nostalgia that you do for the Oakland Raiders because they've stunk my whole life, basically. You know, I didn't see those John Madden teams.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so
you didn't.
I don't so much care about the Oakland Raiders. But I know guys your age, especially Steeler fans your age, really care about the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, we grew up with Raider haters.
Right.
I mean, and you love to hate the Raiders, but you love them at the same time. I mean, you know, Snake Stabler, you know, Jack Tatum, and you just go on Howie Long and on and on. They were nasty. I mean, that was the team that Pittsburgh. I mean, that was one of the greatest rivalries, probably in the decade of the 70s.
Yeah,
and you just can't take that away. And to put them just always wanting to move them,
right,
drives me crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, if a team says, "Hey, we're going broke, we'd love to leave. Is there any city out there?" Fine. Go to L.A. or somebody or somewhere that wants you. But just to say we're going to move somebody because we have to have a team there.
That's what bothers
me. That bothers me, too.
There's no clamoring by any of the teams being mentioned to get out. The only team making any noise is San Diego. And believe me, that is 100% just posturing to get the stadium deal. They don't want to leave San Diego. Who would ever want to leave San Diego?
Right.
I mean, somehow you're in the most beautiful city in the United States and you have a strong football following. They don't want to leave. That's posturing. You don't hear Jacksonville clamoring to leave. You don't hear Oakland. You don't hear St. Louis. These teams aren't clamoring to leave. To your point, this is the league saying we have to have a team, and we've identified these teams as potential teams who could move. The league should be stepping in and helping the Chargers get a stadium deal done, not trying to move them to L.A. to benefit so they can build a glitzy office out there, which is really what it's all about.
Of course it is. And if this fails, you know, in a way to move the Raiders and or the Chargers and or the Jacksonville Jaguars to L.A., the next step will be expansion to 34 to include Los Angeles and London.
Yeah,
have to have two more teams. Yeah. We can't just have one more. So there you have that.
Yeah, and I wonder when and if that happens. I think at some point we're going to see an entire, and I hope I'm dead by then, and luckily with my lifestyle, we don't have to look too far out in the future to do that. I think we're going to see an entire European division. I can't see just slapping one team in London. I think in a short term we'll see that in the next several years. But I think we're looking at a league. We're going to have an entire, you know, be it all in England or whatever other hurting cities are over there in that terrible mid-century nonsense we call Europe. Yeah, we're going to have four teams over there. And that's just terrible. And that might be when I punt. Maybe I become a soccer fan then. Not soccer. I hate soccer. You know what? I don't hate soccer. Well, I do. It's butt boring to watch, but I did get into it during the World Cup. But it's the soccer guys. You know, all the soccer guys just annoy the hell out of me. And trying to pretend like they care. Nobody cares. I mean, the Europeans care. And the Southern, what do you call people who live in South America? Are they South Americans? Do you
How
call
about
them that?
That?
All right. You know, I think they like it because they don't know any better. You know, but hearing good old Los Estados Unidos, you know, it's football, it's baseball, it's hockey. Keep your soccer and your soccer talk away from me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're perfectly willing to entertain.
I'm not talking about soccer.
Yeah. I get worked up.
Yeah. But you're talking about it.
You want to talk about fantasy football for a minute?
I would love to.
I was thinking about something. As you guys know, we do this show, and we also record our Fantasy Sports Network show here on Tuesday nights. At least now, we'll probably change that as we get closer to the season. But what we're doing last week, we ranked our initial rankings, our wide receivers on the show. What we did it a draft style, which I think was an interesting way to do it, rather than just, you know, the old way Rick and I used to do it is we'd both rank them, and then our boy Scott Fish on our website had put together. Yeah, basically, it just averaged them together, and we'd both enter our rankings, and it would average them out.
When you ever did.
Well, yeah, the rare occasion I actually did it. And so we did the running backs, and I don't think there was any great surprises there. And we started the wide receivers today. We didn't finish the Fantasy Sports Network show. We'll be going back to that when we get off the air. So we're through the first six or seven picks, and something we slightly touched on, Rick, on that show, but something that's sticking in my head, even as we're sitting here doing this show. You know, we talked, just to throw them out there, we went Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, Jordy Nelson is what we're through, which I think that order may surprise some people. But we talked about, Rick, I think we both agreed Antonio Brown was number one by a pretty good margin. These next 8 to 12 guys, I think you used the phrase throw them in a bag and pull one out when you're trying to rank them. Does this increase the value, Rick, or decrease the value? I think we've had this discussion with running backs as it's become thinner. With this just glut of talent at the top of the wide receiver pool, does it increase your urgency to get one of these guys, or does it further bolster our argument to get those running backs early and know you can get good wide receiver talent later? Yeah, I tend to think in the last couple of years the wide receiver positions become more important. However, as we do this, I'm looking at this list thinking, I don't have to be in much of a hurry. I can get myself a damn good wide receiver in the middle of the second round.
Yeah, and the beauty of it is with the way the wide receivers are and how deep they are, if the wide receivers start going, okay, say you're like, say, number 9 or 10 in the draft, and the wide receivers start going early, man, you are assured a stud running back.
Exactly.
The running backs start going, you know, say the top 5 go, well, now you're at number 9, even if the first 5 go running backs, you're still looking at Brown, Demaryius Thomas, Dez Bryant, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you're going to have two super studs through the first 2 rounds. So, I mean, it's easier, I think. You know, I think it's harder than the early picks. Do I go running back? Do I take an Antonio Brown?
Yeah, if I'm in the top 4.
You know
what
I'm saying? Yeah, exactly. I think that's tougher because now, okay, I've got to make this pick. I don't get another pick for quite a while.
Right.
Down there at 9 or 10, you're sitting there on easy street. You know it's going to be a quality guy no matter which position. You're going to get 2 of them easily.
Yeah, so I was thinking, and I would have bet money before we did this, and this is why this has been a really good exercise. My thought was, you know, outside of your Le'Veon Bell, your Adrian Peterson, you're going to have your top 3, maybe 4 running backs. But we found in doing that running back segment, it got real thin, or at least real, I don't want to say thin, but it got real dicey, 4 or 5 in, which was rare. It used to be 10 or 11 in when it started to get a little dicey. It's, you know, after LeSean McCoy, and I actually consider him a little dicey, and DeMarco Murray, it just sort of falls off the table for me. So I, while I was thinking, so this year my goal is going to be, and I think I've said it on this air or on one of the shows, I'm going to get them two wide receivers, and I'll cobble together a wide or a running back core later on. And I think that's what a lot of the successful teams last year did. But looking at this list, like Rick, I read off those names we've gotten through. We got a long way to go in that show.
Yeah.
We got 30 minutes left to do in that show to get through. We haven't even said the name Calvin Johnson yet.
Right.
You didn't hear the word A.J. Green. Like, on and on, all these heritage stud fantasy wide receivers, we haven't even gotten to them yet. I think it makes the argument, give me a guy who's I tend to undervalue, even if regardless of what run's going on in the first round, give me a steady guy like a Marshawn Lynch in the first round. I'm going to get huge wide receiver talent in the second and third, and I think I'm going to be ahead of the game. I think this has had the opposite effect I thought it was going to. I think it values the top-end first-round running back over these wide receivers because there's not a lot of difference in the top 15. I'm not even talking the top 5 or 6. We're talking the top 15. There's not a lot of separation.
Right. I agree, and it's I think you're right. You almost, if you're in the top five of your fantasy draft, I think you almost have to take a running back.
Right.
Simple as that. Because if you're the number one pick and you take Antonio Brown or Dez Bryant, whoever you think, you know, and you can make arguments as to why you take them, it doesn't make sense to.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you may lose some points. Say you get, I don't know, say you get Randall Cobb in the second round as your first wide receiver. You may lose points from him to Antonio Brown, but the amount of points you lose between those two is not going to be nearly as significant as a point difference between, say, Le'Veon Bell or Eddie Lacy as opposed to
Justin
Rashad
Forrest,
Jennings
yeah,
or something
Justin
like
Forrest
that.
Set, which is what you could end up with as your number one back
right.
If you go receiver. Now, look, you could be sitting there. I mean, it's very realistic. You could be sitting there. I don't think people are going to rank them our way, Rick. Let's say I could be sitting there, Jordy Nelson, Emmanuel Sanders. And boy, I'm sitting real pretty there, but then I'm going with Justin Forsett versus if I have Le'Veon, well, that'd be a little high there, but LeSean McCoy. Matt Forte. I still have Emmanuel Sanders, and let's jump down a little more, you know, a Jordan Matthews, a Julian Edelman. Yeah, you name the guy, Brandon Marshall, who's taking a dip, Jeremy Maclin, all these guys I'd be happy to have. I think that's a better squad. It's a safer squad anyhow.
Yeah, and I can see it both ways. I can see some of these guys, well, I'm going to get Antonio Brown and whoever, you know, Julio Jones, you know, just pick two. And then I'll cobble together, you know, Jeremy Hill and Joik Bell or something like that. And, I mean, it makes a reasonable argument, but I think – to me, with the point difference with some of these running backs. I mean, look, Le'Veon Bell was, 130 points over Jamal Charles last year.
Right.
And Jamal Charles was 75 points over, Mark Ingram.
Right.
There's such a drop-off.
And you're looking at Mark Ingram as probably a top 10 guy this year. Let me I think I have our rankings that we come up with here. Let me go back. The order we went in, we went Bell, Peterson, Forte, Charles, McCoy, Jeremy Hill. I sort of threw a curveball there. You know, we'll certainly discuss that on a later show. Eddie Lacy, DeMarco Murray, Lynch, Foster. Then now we're down to C.J. Anderson, Gordon, Ellington, Ingram. You know, these are your top end number two guys versus what your top end number two wide receiver is going to be. It's just not even close. Now, that being said, Rick, if I'm picking five, and Bell, Peterson, Forte, and Charles has gone off the board, things go traditional, I'm going to dive all over Antonio Brown. I think
sure.
The value's there because he's going to be so much better than, in my opinion, a McCoy, a Lacy. Yeah, I really think he's going to be. But again, you put yourself in a precarious position because after these top 8 or 9 named running backs go, it gets really, really, really messy. I mean, it just gets messy.
It does, and there's so much talent at wide receiver. I think, you know, I still think it's a premium on running backs. And, you know, we're probably some of the last of these holdouts on the value of the running back position, especially in the preseason. Because you hear more and more shows, go wide receiver, go wide receiver.
I was ready to jump on, Rick, until we did this.
But
I was ready.
When it gets to the draft.
Well, and we talked about that last year.
People start balking.
All these, you know, we'll do the air quotes here, all these experts drafts we did in the off season, and that we'll be doing this off season, and then even getting to our live drafts. Everybody, you know, friends of ours, guys we've competed with, other shows, other TV, other websites, pounding their chest. Got to get you Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning. Got to get you them wide receivers. 7, 8, 9 running backs went in the first round of every darn one of those drafts. It bears itself out. I thought this year was going to be the change. It's not going to be. If anything, there to me, and that's my takeaway, there's a higher premium on these top-end running backs than there's ever been in the past.
I agree. It, because of not so much lack of talent, but lack of these number one running backs.
Right.
There's so much of this RBBC that's always prevalent anymore.
Right.
And that makes more running backs value picks on your fantasy squad, but not studs.
Yeah, not producers. It wasn't long ago, Rick, 7 to 10 years ago, where there was 24 to 30, somewhere in that range. Yeah, there were teams that were tinkering with the RBBC, but 7 to 10 years ago, there were 24 solid number one running backs, obviously of varying abilities, but these were guys you could count on. You drafted those guys early, and you supplemented everywhere else. By looking at our list, Rick, there's about 9 of those guys now, and even some of those guys have questions.
Right.
I mean, if you look at it, you know, I think Le'Veon Bell, once he gets back from his suspension, forget it. He's the only game in town. Same with Peterson, same with Forte, same with Charles. LeSean McCoy, I think to a lesser degree, but you got F-Jax in town. This is your number 5 running back. You had Jeremy Hill, who I have at 6, and I think people may disagree with that. You got Gio Bernard in town. Eddie Lacy, there's a guy. Yeah, there's a guy maybe could be moved up for that reason. Marshawn Lynch, same reason. DeMarco Murray, I'm not convinced he gets – all the carries. He's certainly not going to get the numbers like he got last year in Dallas. Arian Foster, his is more injury concerns. When healthy, they'll wear him out. All these other guys, Mark Ingram, there's always 4 running backs on the Saints roster who get carries, who get legitimate carries. Hey, we're at number 8. We're at number 5, really, when these questions start happening. Just really puts a premium. It no matter how big a number.
Yeah, but you run down through the New England's. It is never a sure thing with a running back.
Right.
The Jets had Ivory and Johnson last year. Miami did have Lamar Miller, albeit they weren't that potent. He was a fairly solid, consistent player, nothing spectacular. Buffalo's got the two-headed monster right there. Cincinnati, you already brought up. Cleveland, pick one.
Yeah.
What's
going to happen in Dallas this year with DeMarco Murray gone?
Exactly. I mean, is it Randall?
You know, you've got Ryan Matthews' aunt. Is Sproul still in Philadelphia? I believe he is.
He's in Philadelphia.
You got 3 guys there with a guy who ran away with the top spot of running backs last year. We're talking top 10 guys who have these issues, who have these question marks. And we got teams that you almost had to avoid, and they're going to have 3 different guys drafted, and you never know. Yeah, what are you going to do in New Orleans? C.J. Spiller's down there now. So here we go with that mess again. Now only it's happening to Mark Ingram instead of Fred Jackson. Here we go again with that. What's going on in San Francisco? Does Carlos Hyde come in and just take that Frank Gore role? Or they've always carried 11 running backs. Do we see some ridiculous split there? There's so many question marks. If you got a guy who's solid and you know he's going to get the bulk of the carries, you got to get one of them. It's just that simple.
Right. And now look at St. Louis. You know, Zach Stacy's gone, 7th round pick. He's done. And, you know, I don't know what Fisher's doing. He used to run Eddie George into the ground, but he doesn't have an Eddie George.
Right.
So you got to mix
it. Which kid did they draft?
Well, you got Trey Mason was there that took over for Stacy, and then they drafted.
They drafted one of the big kids.
Oh,
I can't remember which. They all run together.
Not Gurley, was it?
Was it Gurley? Yeah, it was Gurley.
Yeah.
Was it Yeldon?
I can't remember.
Gurley or Yeldon. I think it was Gurley. I'll effort that. You go ahead with your point.
Yeah, but the point is, like you said, there's not these number one backs that are just horses.
It was Gurley.
I thought
number
it was.
Number nine
I,
overall.
Yeah, wasn't certain, but anyway.
So they may run him in the ground. Yeah, that, I think that's going to be a value guy. I love Melvin Gordon.
I don't think
you
can bench Trey Mason is at least like an off-speed, you know,
right.
Guy.
He's going to be a third down back probably. And I think he eats Gurley in. He's coming off two ACL. A guy loves to tear his ACL.
Yeah.
It's like his favorite thing to do.
Right.
And I don't know why. It sucks.
Yeah. But I agree. So, you know, I think we beat that. You know, we'll make our stand. I think the running back position is still a premium because wide receiver is so deep. And save Aaron Rodgers. You know, Peyton Manning, I'm losing my luster for him. Drew Brees is,
yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, very productive, don't get me wrong. But you have Romo, you have Roethlisberger, you have Rivers. Yeah, Russell Wilson. I mean, there's plenty of quarterbacks that can serve your purpose.
I think it's Rodgers, number one, easy, and we'll do this on the Fantasy Show next week. I assume the Fantasy Sports Network show. Then it's Andrew Luck for me, Rick, and I think there's a pretty big chasm there just because of Luck's interception numbers. And then it's, you know, you want to talk about Tom Brady, but how many games does he miss? And does he have a...
Brady doesn't enter it to me.
Not at this point.
Not now.
No,
and I mean,
I'll be curious to see where he slots when we do this. But, yeah, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, you can make an argument for in the first 15, 16 picks. Beyond that, stay away. You know, if I'm sitting there end of the second round and say I've got Adrian Peterson, and I got another pick coming up in three or four picks, I'd take Aaron Rodgers there, you know, and get good value on a receiver coming back. I think that's the move there. But after that, why bother? I mean, it's you've got Rodgers. I think Luck's about on the back end of that tier. You know, Peyton Manning, I think, hovering around. I still have question marks. And then it's 12 guys. It's 12 guys for me.
Yeah.
You know, Brees may be chief among them. But I'm not clamoring to get Drew Brees now.
No, exactly. I mean, you know, there was a few years ago when Drew Brees obviously could have been the guy you coveted.
Right.
You know, out of those, you know, magical three or four
right.
that we always come up with. But he's starting to teeter down a little bit. But, you know, it's not so much Brees. It's just New Orleans is falling
right.
apart a little bit.
Yeah,
so.
And you take Jimmy Graham away, that's a big weapon to lose. And I think
right.
it hurts New Orleans more than it helps Seattle. But we need to have a good discussion on that at some point because I think we've really given short shrift to the Jimmy Graham to Seattle. I don't think we'll do that today.
No, but that's a good discussion. I know we're on the opposite ends
right.
of the argument. So
we'll pencil that in for next week. We'll really have that one out.
Can
I
you
talk,
write?
What?
Can you write?
Well, not really.
Okay. We'll just draw little stick figures and we'll figure it out.
I want to talk about the golf rig. What's up with your boy Rory McIlroy? He is blowing up. Blowing up.
Well, I mean, the guy's, you know, what? One of the top, if he's not the top golfer, I don't know what the rankings are, but I know he's in the top three. And he certainly, even if he's not rankings, he's one of the top three players in the world. So, I mean, it's time he gets hot.
And he's just
closing in on the U.S. Open.
Just in a zone right now. It's amazing to watch. Yeah, it's sort of the Wells Fargo isn't one of those tournaments I clamor to watch. And especially as he's lapping the field, I couldn't turn it off, Rick. This kid couldn't do anything wrong, absolutely nothing wrong. How'd you like to be Phil Mickelson to go out there and shoot 12 under at that golf course and lose by, what, 9 strokes?
Well, I mean,
that's tough. That's rough.
Phil had got that taste at Augusta.
Right.
You know, they went out and shot.
Well, Spieth did the same thing. Spieth went nuts
yeah.
at Augusta.
And that's the thing. I mean, but, you know, you do your best and hope for the best. But, yeah, sometimes guys get hot. But, no, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, you know, Jordan Spieth, is you're saying this, there's a generation up there. These guys are fun to watch. They're fearless. And I'm glad to see it. I really am. I mean, it really starts to pique my interest in the PGA.
This kid's doing Tiger-like things now, which Tiger-like things, i.e. Tiger, is what got me interested in golf because I missed the Jack and the Arnold and the heyday of golf. This kid's doing the same kind of things, and he's doing them better right now. And it's tough. It's tough not to watch. It's tough not to take notes.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you think about, and I don't have Tiger stats in front of me, but I just happened to see last week. I saw a stat from 1970 to 1979. Okay.
All right.
There's 40 majors. In that time frame, in those 10 years. You follow me?
I'm with you.
Okay. Jack Nicklaus played in all 40 of those majors. How many top 10s did he have? Top 10 finishes did he have?
A lot, I'm guessing.
35.
That's a lot. That seems like a lot.
Out of that. In the 10 opens from 70 to 79, he finished. The worst finish that he had in those 10 years was tied for fifth in the U.S. Open.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, Rory, when you're talking Jack and Tiger stuff and you're starting to be included in some of that, I guess the point I'm trying to make is this kid bears notice because he's going to be there in another 20 years in those record books. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago about majors.
You know what?
He's already got four.
You know what Tiger could do to get out of his slump? Yeah, I love this story. This is so hack journalism, but I love this story. But he needs to start dating and then quickly break up with that tennis chick, that Carolyn Wozniacki or whatever her name is that Rory used to date. You know what he's done since he broke up with her?
No.
Previous, while he was dating her, he mustered one victory in an Australian Open and three runner-up finishes.
Okay.
No, she's a hot chick, so yeah, it'd be distracting.
Well, he's playing golf now.
Since then, he's played in 24 events. He's got 7 wins, 4 runner-ups, 2 majors, 2 WGCs, and some European event he's won. Breaking up, I think she's dating J.J. Watt now. He should dump her. He'll have 35 sacks this year. That's my prediction.
Yeah.
J.J., if you're listening, and I'm sure you are, she's hot, but come on, you're J.J. Watt. You could just find some random cricket down at a bar down there in Austin, you know, by University of Texas where all the hotties are running around. Dump this broad, and you will break every defensive record on the book. So good for Rory for getting rid of her. You know, he had his fun. Took a year off, basically, and now he's just lapping the field once he gets rid of this broad.
Well, he's playing golf now. That's the thing. He has time to play golf. So then that's what happens when you practice.
I get that brings up a point with Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
As bad as he's playing, why isn't he playing? You're not going to get better not playing golf, to just show up at the majors.
I'm not sure.
Now, look, he never played, and I get that, but that's when he was the best in the world. The only way to get better now, I have to think, is to play. Maybe he doesn't care. Is there a possibility that Tiger doesn't care anymore? That the fire is gone?
I don't know. I think a guy like him wants so badly to break Jack Nicklaus's major record. I don't think that the fire is gone. I don't think that is the problem.
But I think at this point he has to acknowledge that ship sailed, right? That's gone. That's finished.
I think his body is failing him.
Oh, no question about that.
You know, he's, what, 38? I think
right.
He's 38. He's already broken his leg swinging at a golf club. He's got a violent swing. They're trying to slow it down. But I'll tell you what, I mean, you saw him in the Masters about dislocated his finger, you know, when he hit that root, if you recall.
Right.
I mean, that kind of stuff takes a toll on you. And the older you get, and even you, now that you're getting into your later 30s, you don't feel the same as you did when you were 25.
Oh, no. I mean,
it's, you know.
I feel like hell every morning.
Yeah, and you're still a pup.
Yeah, well, I've lived pretty hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, big words. Yeah.
I used it up.
Mm-hmm.
I done used it up.
Yeah, I did hear a quote there. I read a quote, not didn't hear it. And Arnold Palmer said back in the 60s, he goes, you know, there's a funny thing. The more I practice, the luckier I get.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's goes to your point. I mean, it takes. I mean, I think you're right. I think playing in these tournaments is actually practicing to win, not just hitting shots.
Right, and that's what he was in his heyday. He could out-hit everybody because of that violent swing, and he could make shots. Yeah, that was the big thing that separated him. I think you can improve that. I don't think he's the type of golfer who can change his swing. He can't slow his swing down. You can't give Tiger Woods the Tom Watson swing. It's not who he is. It's not who made him successful. You know, you could say, as Ben Roethlisberger, let's take it back to football for a minute. As he approaches 40, he's not going to be as mobile. Well, he approaches 40. He's probably barely 30, but you get my point.
He's not 33,
I think. As he approaches the double digits in seasons in his career, he's not going to be able to take those hits. He's not going to be as mobile. So what you want to do when you have a microphone is sit down and say, well, he needs to start staying in the pocket and being a pocket patch. That ain't who he is.
Exactly.
It's not what he does, and he's not going to be as successful. I think it's the same for Tiger Woods. And we talk about it 1,000 times. You know, these kids aren't afraid of them. And these kids with Tom Watson looking swings like a Jordan Spieth, he's smashing it 352 that way. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that advantage is gone. I don't think Tiger can change his game enough to adapt to the limitations of his body breaking down. That violent swing made him who he was, and I think it's going to cost him the end of his career. It's going to severely shorten his career. That and the arrogance that he adopted when he was unstoppable and only playing 8 tournaments a year, now he can't bring himself to play these tournaments. He needs to change his game, and he's not getting enough work doing it.
Yeah, and he's trying to change. He's trying to be nice, too, if you notice.
Right.
And it ain't working.
No. he's a dick. Be a dick. That's what you do.
It's kind of sad to watch him trying to.
Oh, because you can tell he's faking.
Develop a personality.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's going to be like if you ever run into Rick and I, and Rick, well, Rick would do that, but if I shake your hand and look you in the eye and smile, know I'm being disingenuous. And you're going to know it, and I'm going to know it because I'm a jerk, you know, and Tiger's a jerk. Be a jerk. Throw a club, curse. You know, I liked it when he was like Happy Gilmore out there, and you just heard beep 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 beep, and he's screaming at photographers, and he's yelling at kids. That's who Tiger is. Be that guy. That's the competitive fire he had. Now he's trying to, you know, because he went out and did his thing, and now, you know, women are mad at him, and you can't have women mad at you anymore, apparently. So now he's trying to be Mr. Nice Guy, and now he stinks. Although I was happy to see he hurried up and he cheated on Lindsay, and he's back to being that, so maybe that'll get him back on track.
That could. It may make him
mad. It seemed
mad.
Like juggling 35 women at a time made him a better golfer.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why he played in 8 tournaments a year.
Well, that's true. He's a busy man.
So maybe he's just watching TV now.
He's
I don't know.
He's a busy man. Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, he's sitting around, so he's getting fat, and his body's breaking down. You know, before, he was either playing golf or he was off on some cricket caper. You know, either way, the endorphins are going. You're always sort of, you know, it's like a competition, you know what
oh,
I
yeah.
mean? So maybe that's the thing. He needs to get back to the hookers. He needs to get back to everything he was doing, which it sounds like he's heading that direction. So you know what? I take it all back. I think Tiger goes on a miraculous run. You know, hopefully he completely falls apart and reverts back to the norm now that, you know, Lindsay, he was trying
I'll
to make her
what,
mom to the kids.
All, you know, all kidding aside, they continue to try to make stories about him. And he's just, you know, I mean, he basically has hit bottom.
Oh.
He's trying to come back, but, you know, the fire's just not enough to do it anymore.
Right.
And I don't know. I it's going to be interesting to see come June when the U.S. Open rolls around. Because this could be a defining year for him. It could be. I mean, you know, the Masters he made the cut, you know, and all, that was all nice and everything. And then all of a sudden he quit playing. Now he's going to play what? In the U.S. Open? Maybe
right.
Memorial, maybe.
Yeah, isn't that his tournament?
Huh?
Is the Memorial his?
Well, no, it's Jack's always.
He has a tournament, doesn't it, Congressional or something. Isn't it right before the Open or is it before the Players? It's right before one of them that he always played. Maybe he doesn't even do it anymore. I thought he did something.
Well, he used to play in the Arnold Palmer Invitational, but I don't even know if he does that. He always been injured the last 2 or 3 years, I think. But anyway, time will tell. I don't know. But, you know, we killed enough time on speculating on what he's going to do. It would be kind of nice to actually see him play to see if he's getting any of it back.
Right.
But one of the big keys is he's not scaring anybody anymore.
No.
These guys aren't afraid of him. And I think that was a big deal when it got right down to it. I can remember, what was the guy's name? Bob something. Got into a playoff with him at the PGA. Just melted away.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that was his MO. Right. I'll stare you down. I'm going to scare you to death. I'm going to crank one down there.
Duvall was scared to death of him. Was it Duvall? No.
Nah.
Who was the guy with the sunglasses that had that little bit of run for
a while?
It was
David Duvall.
Yeah. He was scared of him, I think.
I imagine probably all of them were.
Right.
To one point or another. But they're not anymore. This generation doesn't have a history with them, like we mentioned. And they're not afraid of anybody.
Yeah, he's just an old man to them. Yeah. You know, he's reached that point. Yeah, that's fine. I think the important takeaway from this is he needs to get back to the womanizing. As I think about this, you know, look at the greatest players in all the major sports. You know, Wilt Chamberlain, what'd he claim? He put down 10,000 or something like that. He scored 100 points in a game, for God's sake. Mickey Mantle, Derek Jeter, he just laying pipe more than your local plumber all over town. Hall of Fame career. Tiger Woods, his whole career out there with the hookers and the waitresses and everything. You can't beat him. Wife catches him. He shuts it down. He tries to be the family man. Now he stinks. I think it makes an argument for womanizing. That's the solution to all this. And to any struggling athlete out there, I suggest you go on a little bit of a bender. Get yourself some slump busters, whatever you got to do. Do it and watch your performance rise. I think it has some. Well, maybe we'll get a scientist of some sort on, and it's got to have something to do with the endorphins or something. And getting off the couch, quit watching TV.
Yeah, scientist—that'd be a good thing to get some sort of you know, medical study.
Is Dr. Ruth still alive?
No,
think she'd come on. Is she dead?
She long gone.
Really? That's a shame.
Yeah.
Is there like a Dr. Drew? He does.
How about
all
Dr. Phil.
Dr. Nah, he's a jerk. You kind of look like Dr. Phil though. Now that you say that, you look like Dr. Phil a little bit.
Well, the problem is, Rick.
You even sound like, are you Dr. Phil? There's the question.
Well, I could be.
Rick, you look like Dr. Phil. I can't believe I never noticed that till just now. You got the same haircut, same facial hair.
Same haircut? You don't have any hair.
Bingo! That's what I'm talking about. I can't. You look like Dr. Phil.
You know what I used to, my nickname was... You know what my nickname used to be, like, oh, God, 30 years ago?
No.
More than that, probably 35 years ago.
Oh, is that your buddy who calls in on the Sunday show? What did he call you? What was that nickname? He had a nickname for – or no, he had – you had a nickname for him.
Yeah, Weird.
Oh, yeah, Weird Harold. And what did he call you?
Oh, God, there's numerous.
He told us on the show.
He used to call me Snuffy.
Snuffy, that's it. Snuffy, old Snuffy. Yeah. We're not talking about Snuffy?
No, he's Johnny Fever.
Johnny Fever.
Look just like Howard Hessman from WKRP. You know, had the long hair, you know, sort of bald.
Yeah,
you kind of
do.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we know what the picture's going to be on this show. What's his name again?
Yeah, but Johnny Fever.
Johnny
Howard
Fever.
Howard Hessman was the actor.
Johnny
Fever.
Yeah, I mean,
if you want to know what Rick Briggs looks like on Flinger Briggs, Howard Hessman, that's it.
And Dr. Phil. He looks just like, you're not as fat as Dr. Phil, I'll give you that. Which I always found ironic. He writes all these books about how broads can lose weight, and then he's rolling out there about 275. Where does he get off?
Who's this?
Dr. Phil.
No, he's not fat.
He's butt fat.
No, he's not.
For a guy who talks about losing weight.
You haven't seen him lately.
I don't watch Dr.
Phil. He's not fat.
He's kind of fat.
No, he's not.
He should be jacked for all the crap he talks about losing weight. And he's got that horrific trophy wife of his that just sits there. It looks like a politician's wife, you know, with that painted on smile.
Oh,
you know he's beating her with a belt when they get backstage. You're not fooling me. That woman has got the PTSD.
Either that or the other way around.
Well, that's a whole different conversation. Yeah. That's back into the Tiger Woods conversation. But I'm telling you, that girl, that poor girl, she's afraid to blink. I'm telling you, she doesn't blink when
she
looks at. You know, I watched one time.
She had a little boast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's no blinking going on there,
man.
If
you saw her first thing in the morning, my God, it looked like Broomhilda's cousin. And then they paint her all up, and you think, yeah, that's not bad. But yeah, well, we're way off topic.
It's like Keith Richards.
Yeah,
all
right.
Of a sudden she walks out looking like that.
Well, I don't put in a lot of time with Dr. Phil, but I've seen this. And they're always, especially when he's making some point about, you know, some women's lib nonsense that nobody really cares about except these horrific fat women who watch this show. But then she's sitting there, and they'll always go to her, and she's sitting there nodding her head, and it reminds me of, I think it was David Koresh, but I wouldn't swear to it, one of them cult leaders. And he was sitting up in like in this chair, and he was up higher, and he had his 35 wives or whatever they were sitting around him in their Amish chick garb. And they're all just staring up at him like he's the Messiah, and they can't believe they're even in his presence. And that's what Skeletor here, his wife, looks like, all painted up, looking at every word this dummy says. You know, he's talking all this women's lib nonsense. I'm contending, I'm going to say it right now, Dr. Phil is just beating her down any chance he gets. She's scared to death of that man.
I disagree. I think it's the other way around. She goes, "You going up there right now and you let everybody know that you know what's going on."
That's
but
right.
Just bear in mind, Baldy, I run the damn
I
show.
I'm running the show. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
Maybe that look in her eyes, knowing look like,
exactly.
You better say that, pal.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Had better. And what time is my dinner going to be on the table?
Like, she's going like this, nodding up and down, like, okay, I'm on the right track. I can keep talking. When she stops nodding, he goes, "We'll take a break." And then they confirm.
All
you
right.
Know.
Yeah, he finds out what his next opinion is going to be.
Well, I think about killed the show.
How'd we get there?
I don't know, but we're...
We solved a lot today, though.
We solved a lot.
We solved the running back conundrum. We solved the...
Tiger Woods conundrum.
The Tiger Woods conundrum. We solved...
And you're going to just unplug us here.
Yeah, I got...
You're messing
got
with the white
issues.
Wire. That's a dangerous one to play.
Yeah, that's kind of an important wire,
yeah.
No doubt about it.
But,
so we solved... You look like Dr. Phil.
And Howard Hessman.
Howard Hessman. What's that? Johnny Fever.
Yeah.
So check out the site for that one. This is a good show. I don't know.
You still look like Mr. Potato Head, so it still doesn't matter.
Well, there's nothing wrong with Mr. Potato Head.
Did you ever see The Far Side, that comic that used to be in the paper? It was called The Far Side.
Yeah,
it had the dorky kids with the buck teeth and everything. And they had this one that said, you know, the potato heads in France, and there's a bunch of French fries walking around the street.
There's another commercial. We're getting way off base, Rick.
Why not?
Overtime.
The show's over.
Yeah, maybe we should just wrap it up here. So,
yeah, we are Flager and Briggs. Thanks for joining us. Join us next week. And we're getting close to training camp now. I mean, it's not too far away. We're towards the end of May.
Yeah, for more great Dr. Phil talk, maybe even a little fantasy football, we'll be back. Stick with the Asylum Sports Network at asylumfantasysports.com. I bet you none of those other guys are talking about Dr. Phil, Mr. Potato Head, or anybody else. But if they're not, email them. Let them know that's what you want to hear. So until then, we'll see you.
Yeah, take care.
I think we're having some audio difficulties.
Yeah,
that's
a great song
here.
You got on there, buddy. There's a needle stuck on a record.
That's what it seems like. I don't know what's happening here.
I think everybody's turned it off by now.
Yeah,
anyway.
I would
quit worried
turn
about
it off. So we'll do this for old time's sake. Remember that one? We'll see.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this show went right off the rails real quick. Probably too soon for an Amtrak joke, but we're sort of similar to them.
Yeah, baby, it's a random barbed wire, moonshine whiskey. Park your car, get stuck.
Cole, get over here and look at this.
Yeah, Rick's messed it up yet again.
Oh, what happened? This is all Cole. That's his job.
Yeah, boy, I'm about